Actually, for this presentation, I'm Gao Zhang Wang, and I just got a tenure track position at Southern Illinois University in a rather good department, Department of Geography, I believe. So Gao Zhang is in the process of recovering from moving, starting to teach classes at this moment in time. So I'm going to fill in on his behalf. And the topic today is the simulation of spatial pattern dynamics of off-road traffic and cumulative impacts, and relating that to land repair practices. The specific objectives of this presentation is to relate not only current activity or current land condition and historic land condition, both into making recommendations for land repair and a method for allocating the cost of making either the right decisions or the wrong decisions and the uncertainty associated with it. So, kind of to put this in perspective, a lot of installations will use an assessment card, so to speak, to make assessments of a particular area. And so a lot of them are sort of erosion-based. They'll take into account slope, a loss of vegetation, a number of factors like that, and come up with a score of 0 to 100, you know, that's scaled out there, with the idea of those that have larger numbers or worse and should be prioritized for repair. And there's some thought out there that you need to think not only of the condition that the land currently is, but what the historic conditions of the land are, because that relates back to the appropriate types of land activities or land repair activities that are there. So if you kind of take this here, if you take the surveys that they have, which are only looking at current land conditions, you kind of go from a non-disturbed site to a heavily disturbed site. That's the scale of like 0 to 100. And you make the decision that all severely disturbed areas should be prioritized first and get the most activities. But if you think about the historic land conditions that are out there, so that, for example, over the last 5 years, was that heavily disturbed area this year heavily disturbed over the past 5 years, or was it maybe not disturbed over the last 4 years leading into the current year? And the choice of land decision, land repair decision, may in fact be different. So if it's disturbed every year, reseeding may not be the most optimum activity to do. You may need to do some sort of land forming activity that's related out there. But if it's severely disturbed at this point in time, but historically never or rarely gets disturbed, then reseeding type activities may be very appropriate because it's a low cost and it's an activity that will last for a while. Again, we did this activity in Fort Riley. Those little pins kind of represent the measurement plots that Fort Riley had. The methods that we used were image texture analysis, and since I'm speaking honestly on behalf of Gao Zhang, I believe that at this part of the study he was getting ready to prepare for his presentation to apply for this job in his interview. So he put a lot of effort into the image texture analysis. And what we're really trying to do there is relate the ground data to the imagery data so you can come up with the best relationships so that you know what really is occurring across the installation. And Gao Zhang took essentially, I believe it was 201 different ways of characterizing remote sensed imagery to relate back to soil or ground vegetation. So he took traditional type activities, just the TM imagery data layers themselves and combinations of those layers, but he also took what was called texture analyses of those. And so if you think of like Krigi, where you have a value and you have relationship to the surrounding pixels of it, that is an example of a texture analysis. And he did a number of those that are commonly found in the literature and identified those that had the highest correlation with the ground data that he then used from that point. To actually tie the points together, once he had the images that most highly correlated with the ground data, was he did a conditional co-simulation again so he could count for the uncertainty associated with the maps that came out of it. From there was a classification that was made into the disturbance in terms of the high, medium, and low disturbance levels, much like the indices that the installations use that are out there. Again, then did a quantification in the same process that brought in the historic disturbance patterns that were out there, so you know which areas were routinely impacted and those that were only impacted periodically, and came up with identifying land repair thresholds, or identifying land repair out there. And then he came up with a loss function to bring in the cost associated with it. So the actual comparison that will come out of it is a traditional threshold value, and that's basically if you take like an erosion loss equation and you have a tolerance for soil loss, anytime you make a prediction that exceeds that threshold, that's identified as a land repair practice. The next comparison that was made against that threshold value was a probability threshold value. That brings in that uncertainty component. So it's not only what your best estimate is above that threshold, but how certain you are in that how confident you are in that estimate you made to make some kind of projection. Are you statistically above that threshold? And then a loss function to bring in the cost, and I'll explain the loss function. So the maps that came out, and you'll see for Fort Riley, that these are the taking the best texture image, relating that back to the soil for each of the years and making a projection over time, with 2001 being referred to as the most current data layer that's there. Please ignore the mu. That's an image that didn't go through on the current fonts that are here. So the ground disturbance, we broke it up into four categories. There was a lot of disagreement over what these categories ought to be, but we identified areas that had greater than 70% repair, or greater than 70% cover as not needing repair. Those that had less than 30% cover as essentially being severely disturbed and needing the most intense repair associated with it. The way we brought in cumulative impacts was you took that same classification for the current year and you brought in a weighting of the past years that led into it. So if it heavily disturbed the year before, that would have a heavy influence on it. If it was heavily disturbed 5 years before, that would have a lesser effect. So there was a weighting that brought it all in, but you still ended up with a value that represented the cumulative pattern over time. And again, you end up with a very similar type looking map, except that the range now represents the cumulative as opposed to just the current year values. So you'll see the patterns are very similar, except the number of red areas in this case here that are highly impacted tend to be a little less than in the past because it represents not only highly impacted vegetation loss this year, but vegetation loss for a series of years leading into it. So if you take those maps, essentially is our best estimate what we have out there, and bring it in the cumulative past that's brought into it, and you use that threshold measure, just does our best estimate exceed the threshold for repair? Again, you identify areas that meet the threshold value by that. You add that one extra step is, which bring in the variability associated with that estimate so that you have an idea of how confident you are about that. You get another set of predictions that identify those areas that you're very confident that you are above the threshold value. To bring in the idea of cost or the loss function is that there are a number of errors that you can make, or I guess you could refer to essentially bad decisions are. I mean, in an area that in fact is identified as not needing repair, you may in fact need to do some level of minor or major repairs. Or on the other areas, those that you identify as requiring repair may in fact not need repair based on uncertainties associated with the disturbances in the past. And those uncertainties can come either in terms of how you estimated them or the fact that you're using a representation of the past as to being a projection of how frequently you think it will be disturbed in the future. But it's so there's a series of errors that you can make with each one of the decisions out there. So if you have a cost, each type of repair, doing no activity requires no cost investment. Doing a minor repair that involves only drill seeding has a certain cost. Higher cost is, you know, preparing the seed bed and seeding in fact in there up until essentially having to do intense repairs where you have to landscape the area out or do land forming out there to prevent sedimentation off of the site. So those are costs with either doing the activity. There are costs with also doing the activity in that you have a loss of training or you have a loss in the ability to train later on. So if you put those costs together, you can get them into a loss function that essentially has the probabilities of going either way because you have the uncertainties in the decisions that you make. And again, you can come up with minimizing that cost function that's out there and identifying the areas that need to be repair. So if you think those maps all look very similar, if you line them all up in terms of a percentage of the area that's out there, so that these represent the percentage of acres over time that needs severe repairs. And this is a percentage of area that requires no repair, this being just exceeding the threshold value, this bringing in the uncertainty in exceeding the threshold value, and this graph down here bringing in the costs of making wrong decisions or right decisions in either direction. And what you kind of see out of it is bringing in the uncertainty, there's a bit of an increase you can see in terms of the amount of area that you identify as not needing repair at all, and some shifting between the intermediate repairs there, the uncertainty you have in each of the categories. And that somewhat makes sense. In areas that are completely trashed, you're fairly confident if you think about the uncertainties that George talked about earlier. If you look at the uncertainty and how confident you are, areas that are completely trashed, you know fairly confidently are there. Areas that are in very pristine conditions, you have very confident predictions in those areas. Those that fall into the middle tend to be where you have uncertainty and knowledge. So by bringing in those uncertainty, we're essentially making more of the decisions in these intermediate ranges into a slightly better decision. When you bring in the cost of making the wrong decisions or the cost of making the right decisions, the cost not associated with being able to train there and the cost itself, the picture somewhat changes a little bit, and it's not really clear to me that there's a specific trend that's in there, except that in general, it seems to argue for more levels of intermediate training out of the whole process. Conclusions from that. The co-simulation led to patterns, and we were able to capture the uncertainty in them. Cumulative impacts did have an influence on what you might identify in terms of the types of appropriate activities that are out there. Both the threshold and the probability-based methods are relatively simple, direct, and easy to use. The bringing in the uncertainty into it allows you to capture and communicate that which you don't know into a more logical decision. When you brought in the loss function, which brought the extra information in and we thought inherently would give us a much better answer out of the whole thing, what we found is not only the fact that it's much more complicated and difficult to use, but the results are very much dependent upon the specific cost and loss functions that you include in there, right? And so while it seems very simple, so the cost that came out of it, Dick Gephardt that was in here earlier, I mean, there are reports out there that tell you what a lot of the average costs are. Installations have records of what their average costs are. But if you really look at the activities they do over time, even at Fort Riley, which has a relatively simple set of range of activities they do, they change dramatically over time. And the costs do vary considerably over time. But there are also certain factors that are in there, like the cost of not training, putting that land out for a year while you go in and do the land forming activities, which are very poorly known. And so we looked early on in a study leading up to this, the cost of not training. And you can come up with a wide range of values that are associated with it. And the value we used in here was about the most conservative value, the lowest value we could find. We had one GAO report where they brought in all the costs associated with training. So one common use is, whatever cost to train, if you can't train, that is, if you were willing to spend that amount of money to train, that would be a good estimate of what the value of training is to you. And they bring in a lot of the costs like personnel and training and, you know, all the support vehicles and those things that are on out there. You include that as a cost in your analysis and you can conclude that you can buy anything you want, including the state of maybe Nebraska, to justify training out of it because there's this huge cost associated with it. But even using these kind of conservative of estimates that are in there, this knowledge is really sort of lacking in that area to be able to apply this type of application given the differences in answers that you're potentially getting out of it. So I think in general we kind of concluded that some of the simpler methods, but those that did include the uncertainty, were much more applicable situations to the type of situations that the military would apply to. Thank you very much. And if there are no questions, this is the end of our session.